One records a podcast when one has something to say on the subject.
The beginning of this week, the lawyers exchanged their memos, which are like laying down what the case is for each side. I'm really happy with the memo that my lawyer created. It really lays it all out. It's remembering of did I tell you about the revelation I had at the silent retreat about the arbitration?
We discussed the arbitration. I'm not sure in relation to a revelation.
I remembered that the first of the five contract drafts that I made, which I made in March, which was shortly after he had first contacted me, that I used the word deposit in that draft, contract. And then for the subsequent four contracts from May and June, the word was changed to payment, and the payment terms were changed. And we have phone call records showing that I talked to him for 20 minutes about that change and other things. And I remembered that at the silent retreat, which is great, because I had been talking with my lawyer about how, like, we talked about this. He and I, we discussed how, you know, the project hadn't started and I was doing work for him. And so it was no longer a deposit. It was now a payment for work from the past and not to prepare for work in the future. And he's like, yeah, that's great. My lawyer. And he's like, yeah, that's great. But where's the evidence? And I'm like, it was a phone call. Am I supposed to transcribe every call I make? Like, what? So it was very frustrating. So finally, in the silent retreat, I remembered that I have a paper trail for that. So I was very happy. And I sent it to my lawyer, and he was like, this is very good.
This is very good. Well done.
This is very good. Because your story makes sense, but there's no backing for it. And it's like, this is it. This solidifies it. And I even got him on board on how, since this guy wants to follow the contract to a T, technically, he paid me that initial payment for everything from before. Like, that was just a payment to engage the contract. And then the contract was engaged, and I performed another 26 hours of work. And so technically, he owes me money for that. Mm-hmm. Not that I owe him more money. Which I was just waving before, because I'm like,
you're a nice guy.
Yeah, I think so. Since he really wants to follow the letter of the contract, then I will take that payment. So that's also in the memo, which is great. And so at the same time, we received the memo from the other lawyer, from the other party. I was a bit worried about this, because I'm like, you know, there could be some unknown thing, and like, well, they have some smoking gun I have no idea about. Like, what do they have up their sleeve? And there's really nothing. They kind of, like, repeat their argument a bunch of times to try and, like, fill space.
So, in conclusion, the fourth grade book report of legal documents.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lies in it that are easily provable with the evidence that they themselves lay out, the log of text messages, which they also have and have provided as evidence, like, clearly show that one of their main points is a lie. Yeah. My lawyer sent me the draft, and he's like, you know, this, in my professional opinion, this is really poorly done. And so it gives me hope. You know, I feel this whole thing feels it's so scary. It's the biggest argument I've ever had. You know, it's like,
I mean, it sounds like this person has, I mean, maybe because he doesn't have a huge number of legs to stand on.
Yeah,
I wonder if he's gone from firm to firm, and they're like, no, we're not taking this case because, you know, there's not much to it, and he's, you know, the one he's found that will take it on have taken it on because they need the work, and maybe they're not that great at the job. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, so when I first hired my lawyer, he looked up this other lawyer, and he's like, yeah, I don't know that I haven't worked with them, but I've talked with some people who have worked with them, and they fight to the bitter end. they just go way past what's actually good for their client, and they just go to get to the end. And so far, that has proven correct. I've made substantial settlement offers that they have just ignored, not ignored. They responded to them a negative, but it's just like, it's just baffling.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been that's been a big thing going on for me. No, either way, whatever happens, it's just, I'm just glad for it to be over with. I know where I know what I did, and I know what I said I would do, and I have complete, not relief, but assuredness in my own self and my actions, and whatever anybody else wants to do with what they decide, then you know that's just, I have no control over that, so. I'm just excited to figure out what that is and have it be settled.
Just so much of stuff like this is just sitting in the uncertainty and the unknowing of it, and it's horrible.
Yeah,
it's no fun.
Been doing a lot of practicing of sending loving kindness to this guy, just knowing you know he's another version of me. He's going through a much more difficult life path on this go around, and I don't envy that. He's obviously sitting in a bunch of anger and fear and scarcity and lack. I feel bad for the guy.
I wonder if he still listens.
I don't know. I mean,
like post arbitrage, because he'll listen to this. I mean, you know, sorry, no, he'll have listened to the previous episodes. But right. I wonder, like, you know, does he want to know what we said about him?
Yeah, I wonder too.
You know,
and after, so I told you that he sent a little chart of which episodes were and weren't listened to. It stopped at the one where we talked to the specific listener at the beginning of the episode. So he may have thought, oh, they know now. And so there's probably not going to be anything else. It's possible. I don't know. But, or maybe.
I mean, yeah, again, like he's trying to catch you in something like, he actually revealed this thing. It's like, no, he's not dumb. He's not an idiot. And, I mean, A, also, there's nothing to
there's
hide.
Nothing,
B,
there's nothing to
if
reveal.
There were. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Three Convergence episodes were listed as evidence in the case, which is hilarious because they're recorded months after. And one of the prosecuting lawyers' emails was like, all right, so we also need access to plug into speakers somehow so we can.
Oh my God.
They actually want to play it out loud. And I have no idea. It's like incredible. They listed three episodes, and I've re-listened to those episodes a couple times. And I have no idea what they're like. It makes no sense to me. Two of them I do mention this arbitration issue. One of them I don't mention it at all, but I do mention a different project, which I'm like wondering if that's why. I have no idea.
Trying to do some inference there, and
yeah, it's pretty funny. I mentioned a different project where I procrastinate, and so I procrastinate long enough that it didn't matter anymore, and it's so funny. It's so funny because in that project, like, I save my client money by not doing that thing I'm procrastinating on because they get sick and can't do the work, and so it's like, well, I'm glad that I didn't do that thing that I would have charged them for.
Yeah, but I guess if he's going to use that, he wants to use it as some kind of character reference.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something. Yeah, yeah.
Which, all right.
But you can't. Yeah, I mean, it's not. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
How bizarre. All right. Well.
Yep. That's all. That's
soon enough.
That's it about. It actually, now my lawyers, my lawyer and their lawyer are going back and forth, and they've gotten they've gotten the arbitrator involved because the other lawyer hasn't provided all of the evidence, which is breaking arbitration rule number 20 and whatever. And so they're like throwing very polite insults at each other, like, this is very unprofessional and this and that. It's all pretty comical, stepping back and you know, not thinking about how much money is on the line. And the lawyer bills. I'm really not excited for my lawyer bill in a couple days.
No.
Oh
no,
my God. No. So yeah. So onto better things.
Onto better things.
I have three things on my list to talk about. Mm-hmm. Before we get onto that, a little palate cleanser. What do you call a genderless quantum computing programmer?
I don't know. What do you call a genderless quantum computing programmer?
Non-binary.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Of course it is.
What do you call a genderless lactose intolerant?
Just hang on a minute. What do you call a genderless lactose intolerant? I mean, non-dairy, but like, go on.
Non-binary.
No.
What do you call...
Boo.
What do you call a genderless serial killer?
Non-Bundy. I don't know.
They slashed them.
That's fucking phenomenal. Oh, I love that one so much. Oh, nom, 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 nom. Oh, my God, I love that so much.
Me too. Oh, it's so good.
Fuck me. Where did that come from?
The first one I made up. The second two I heard on... there's a YouTube channel called Yeah Mad. And they do dad joke drinking competition.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's really funny. I've been using that to raise my spirits lately.
Yes. Oh, man.
Are you familiar with the... finance guru Ramit Sethi?
Yes, in as much as I've heard of them.
Yeah, Margaret and I were first introduced to him through TBM's expanded podcast. I believe he has two episodes on there that are really great. We've picked up his book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
Yes, I thought that was the one.
Yeah.
I thought it was I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Yeah, and he's got the podcast as well.
And we've been working through that. There's a Netflix show, which we have not watched yet. Mm-hmm. And then we just recently got into his podcast, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which I've had in my audio queue on Overcast for like 6 months, and I just never gotten around to it because it sounds like unfun to just listen to people's financial stories. But he also does video, and they're on YouTube, and we started watching them, and it is really great. It is really interesting and fun. And so he'll have usually a couple come on and just talk to him about like their struggles with finances, what kind of debt they have, what kind of, you know, this and that, their income and whatever. And They establish some common ground and understanding of how one person is kind of upset with how the other person uses money and vice versa. And they talk about the conversation around money. They talk about how easy it is for the two of them to talk about money. And then this part's really great. They get into the background of like what informed how they think about money, how their parents talked about money, and how they're repeating patterns of their parents' relationship with money. And that usually is like a pretty big revelation for each participant in the phone call, even though they're obviously followers and they've seen the podcast before, but they still don't make that connection to their own family, which is really great. And then they get into the numbers. So he has a free worksheet to fill in all your assets and debts and your fixed costs, which are like your housing and utilities and groceries and debt payments and all that, your regular payments towards investments and your regular payments towards savings. And then at the bottom, there's like your guilt-free spending money. So everybody that comes on has filled in this spreadsheet, and then they go over the numbers on the call. And on the video, it's really great. Well, on the video, it's really great earlier because you get to see people's facial expressions. You get to see their dynamics working, you know, talking to each other and how all that goes. And that, it just shows a lot, way more than just the audio alone. And then when they get to the numbers part, then you get to see the number spreadsheet there and not just hear them talk about it, which for me, listening, I wouldn't be able to follow along enough, I think, but watching it, it's way easier to follow along. And then he really goes, like, there's like almost always a really easy, not easy, a simple change, a simple solution, a simple like guidance that really can help them get back on track with a good timeline and stability and everything. And it's really inspiring. It's really exciting. You know, Margaret and I have some debts from some things, and we've been able to manage it really well with like zero interest cards and stuff, but it's been looming and it's been hard to deal with. And seeing these people's stories at a bunch of different ages and backgrounds and financial levels and everything, and their abilities to take themselves out of debt. It's really highly recommended. I love it. Not just for you, but for the listener, like everybody.
Yeah, no, indeed. We, here in the UK, there is a guy called Martin Lewis, who is known as the money saving expert. He's quite an interesting cat, I think. He's got a little show on ITV, one of our major TV networks, and it's live, and he'll get stuff in from Twitter and things, but it's very much at the sort of front end, like day-to-day kind of, you know. And I think he had one of those like programs back in the day that was how to be mortgage free by the age of 40 or something. And it was, you know, some of it gets very kind of penny pinchy and stuff, but I think he's moved away from that and more into advocacy.
Oh, that's great.
And it's, you know, not quite getting into policy, but he does kind of, I think, try and get into policy, and he does sort of campaign for things. He's one of those people that's quite interesting to listen talk, because he can sort of talk quite, he talks quite compassionately, actually, because, you know, we are in this moment right now where it's very difficult for people. Yeah. And I don't know, but I'm making a presumption here that people who are doing the I will teach you to be rich, it strikes me that there may be, and this is an assumption based on nothing, so please correct me if I'm wrong. I get the impression that they're not necessarily near the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Oh, there's a whole range.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very up for anybody. Yeah. We got people who are, you know, still living, you know, they're married with kids and living in their parents' place because they can't afford anything nicer. And they've got people who are like, they're making $250,000 a year and buying big trucks and whatever.
Yeah. Because that's it. I mean, there's the difficulty or the inability to manage money, which is one thing. Which can lead to all sorts of stuff, and that's where the couples counseling stuff can get really nice and juicy and meaty. And but then, yeah, there are people, and that's what's interesting. Then, you know, there are people who are at the thick end of the wedge of this stuff, and it's not through their own lack of foresight or eating too many avocados, as the
that's something that the previous financial expert that I'm familiar with, Dave Ramsey, he's like all about like ditch your coffee from the coffee shop and you'll be able to pay off your debt.
Just eliminate joy and then you'll be fine.
And that's like what's cool about Ramit is he comes at it from the opposite, like ruthlessly cut where it doesn't matter to you. But then establish your rich life. Like what do you love? And then, you know, have a budget and, you know, spend as much as you want in your budget on that area so that you can be joyous and also pay off debts and also build up investments and take care of your retirement and all that kind of thing passively, and you know, automate it so it just happens and you don't have to think about it, that kind of thing.
Nice.
It is. It's really nice. It's exciting.
Yeah. On the money front, actually, I have a coach that I work with who we actually had a big money conversation this week. He is someone who talks a lot about money, and he has a course around pricing, and he has this really interesting story I don't know if it was an inception point for him, but it feels like it, where he's written about this openly, but he basically went into a meeting with a prospective client and accidentally said a number where the comma was like moved to the left by a digit. and they were like, cool, let's go. So, you know, for example, you know, he meant to say £1,000 and he said £10,000, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, cool, all right, let's go.
Wow.
And yeah, and it starts to open your eyes, you know, because there's so much stuff in those numbers that we choose.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff in the in pricing that speaks to our own innate sense of value,
yep.
and what we think we are worth, what we think we can get away with in inverted commas, what we think we can charge.
Yeah.
And it was great, really, to have a conversation with him this week, to be like, well, you know, what if you had this big ticket item? And it was fascinating to actually get into a thing. So this relates to the business of podcasting. I'm going to go a couple of levels up the stack and hopefully we'll make our way through and this will all make sense.
Love it.
I am someone who takes most things that people say at face value.
Yeah.
It's quite often for someone to say, no, I was joking to me. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, of course. Yeah, I tend to, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, like, it really didn't occur to me until I was far too old, like in my 20s. It didn't really occur to me that people just say things just to wind you up.
Mm.
Like, just to get a, like, and that was so sort of alien to me.
Yeah, me too.
Or you would do that just to, you know, wind someone up, as the Brits would say. And so, you know, because for me, you say things, words mean things and whatever. That's fine. And so it's been really interesting thinking about conversations I've had with potentially with clients, and I will name no names, but it's like the story that I am told, and it might be the story that they're telling themselves, but it's not necessarily the true story.
Mm-hmm.
And so people talk, you know, in my circles, we talk about starting a podcast and it's all about service, right?
Yeah.
And it's all about, I want to serve and I want to share information. And that may be true, but is it the underlying motivation?
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually, not maybe for not all, but I think for a lot, maybe most, the underlying thing is I want status. I mm-hmm. want to look at my podcast app and see my face and the, you know, the Joe Schmo show. Actually, a bad example because there was a thing, wasn't there, called the Joe Schmo show? But you get the idea. Insert your name here show. They want to see that sat alongside, you know, Tim Ferriss,
sure.
or, you know, Ramit Sethi or whoever it's going to mm-hmm. be, you know, kind of rubbing shoulders with them sort of thing. People want that significance. They want that status. And maybe they'll admit it to their podcast producer. Maybe they won't. Mm-hmm. Some will just go out like straight up. And I think those are probably the people I don't want to work with, who are just like, where it's not latent, where it's just like, yeah, I want the, you know, the whatever me show, because we're probably going to have a hard time talking about generosity and mm-hmm. service and that kind of stuff, which you do need as a podcaster. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to stand out, you've actually got to think and care about the listener. Yeah, it was a really interesting thing. We actually sat and he convinced me, and then, well, convinced and encouraged me to offer something at a much higher price for the type of person who wants the me show and wants help creating that, rather than, you know, assuming people don't necessarily have a lot of money. Because, you know, I've got a nice package and I enjoy doing the work and it's all fine. But I need to have a certain number of those a week and, mm-hmm. you know, or a month, and, you know, they come with some time constraints and that kind of stuff. It's not just an hour a week. There's a bit extra. Yeah. And so, you know, if I want to make my income target, then I need a more, you know, a higher ticket offering. And And it was one of those things, like, we went through the whole thing about value, about the story I have about, well, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for 16 years, but I don't have the provable track record, or like, well, I do, but it's in a different, you know, a different kind of way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm not going to have produced a podcast that you've heard of.
Right.
But then, you know, I started thinking about that and I'm like, yeah, that might be the case if you're talking to a complete stranger, but I don't talk to complete strangers. We've had this conversation before. Like, my stuff doesn't work with complete strangers.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I work well when I've got an introduction from someone because it's all based on trust. And so there's a higher likelihood they already know a show I've worked on because of the, that's how recommendations right. work. And so they've got that sort of built in. You know, I don't have to always be thinking about what does a complete stranger think about me, because they're unlikely to want to, you know, pick up the phone kind of
thing. Yeah.
As of today, and I actually sent this out to the first potential lead, if you mm-hmm. will, of an offering that's three times the price of the previous offering.
Wow. Love it.
Which is three times the price of the base offering. So I just thought, you know what? Let's stick with multiples of three.
Let's do it.
And let's do it. We shall see what happens. You know, because the question was basically like the invitation or the provocation from my coach, one of my coaches, was like, what would happen if you just put your price up to this, you know? I don't know. Because, mm-hmm. You know, us Brits can often have pretty uncomfortable, like, we don't like talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because there's all the stuff that comes with
yep.
it. And culturally, it's just weird and we don't like it. Because there has to be an element by which you can stand by that number, look someone in the eye and go, I am worth, you know, £2,300 for you to work with me over 3 months. Like, you have to be able to, you know, look someone in the eye and go, that is the case. And so it's much easier to say, I'll just look down, I'll just send you a web page. I'll send you a web page with all the information. And then if there's any confrontation, we can have it over email.
Yeah. I want to say, first of all, I love all of that. I love that your coach pushed you to that. I love that you tried that out and you just sent it out and you're going to see what happens. And that's awesome. Great work. I wonder, you mentioned that you have to be able to say that this number is what I am worth. I wonder if there's a way to disconnect that worth feeling from the number, because it's just a price. It's not you.
It's more about them. You know, all these things I know, like, price is a signal. Mm. It's an indicator of certain, you know, certain things. There is going to be a contingent of people who will look at my number and go, that's too low. I don't want to work yeah. with you because that number's too low.
Yeah.
Because you're obviously swimming in a different pool. And it's got nothing to do with value. It's got nothing, right. You know, it's purely...
Exactly.
An indicator there. And it is from them. It's all in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, there is always room to negotiate up or down
mm-hmm.
Because it all depends on the person doing the valuation rather than the person who is set the number.
Yep. As Lucy likes to say, money is energy and nothing more than that. It's just a transference of energy. And also an interesting thing that she says is that money and relationships are tied together, the energy and the energetics around the two of them. And I can never remember, she has to explain it all the time because nobody can ever remember what she's talking about. But but when she does explain it, it's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. You get caught up in the, you know, the reality distortion field of her presentation and everything. But there does seem to be something about that, about love and money. And
yeah, I mean, you know, two people can have such wildly different ideas. I mean, that mm-hmm. was one of the things that I can't remember if it was the Gay Hendrix or the 10X. It's probably come up in both, to be honest. It's because everything is everything. Mm-hmm. But I think it was probably in the Gay Hendrix about working with people, two people in a relationship, and one of them being really frustrated about the other person's attitude with money.
Yeah.
And it's because they have different cultural
yeah.
ideas, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with your, well, it has a lot to do with your upbringing, or can have a lot to do with your
yep.
upbringing, but it's just, you know, whatever attachment you've got mm-hmm. to money. And so, yeah, I'm getting better at that stuff. I still want to be able to look a client, a prospective client, in the eye and go, this is the price. And for them to say, you know, for me to weather the storm of then going, well, I can't afford that, to then go, okay, well, you know, here are some other options.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and that's, you know, that's what how you need to be able to navigate this, mm-hmm. is to say, well, that's fine. Like, you know, that's too expensive doesn't mean no. It just means, all right, well, here's some other ways. And that doesn't mean discounting either. Right. It just means here's some of the ways that I can help in other ways, because this is the value of the work.
Yep.
It's the work that we're doing, and that's what's valuable. It's the outcome and all that malarkey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the frustrating part about the arbitration that I'm going through, is that like that was what I did. I said, you know, this is what it's worth to me for us to continue working together. And he was like, yeah, great. That works for me, and I'll sign and pay. And now he's saying a bunch of lies. It's really annoying. So speaking of podcasts, there was a new episode of one of my favorites that came out. This cool guy talked for a bunch about
55 minutes. No, it's probably more than that.
Yeah, about like the past 4 years of his life and how it all led together. It was your podcast, Morning Creative. That's the one.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw the traps you were laying.
What's the behind the scenes?
I mean, I don't know, because to be honest, I feel like a lot of it we've discussed on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we would be in danger of trying to pull too much marrow from those particular bones. Sure. So yeah, no, it was I felt the need to jump on the mic. I had no idea I was gonna go for that long. But I felt the need to jump on and boom.
Yeah, I kinda told Margaret it felt like a divergence episode on the opposite side. Yeah. It was really great. I really liked the part where you said that you want to keep doing convergence for like forever. I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I could do this every day.
Me too.
Especially as I don't have to edit.
Yeah. No, I'm really enjoying the edit. That's really fun. Yeah. Well, it was good to hear you kind of process through all that in a concise.
Yeah. It's sort of useful to tell, you know, to have the sort of the definitive story as it felt at the time, kind of nailed down. It's a weird, you know, it has been a weird time. There's still a hangover with Morning Creative, because there's still a lot of, you know, it's in my email signature. It's, you know, all over the place. And so it's like, at some point, I need to figure out what it is, and it needs to figure out what it is and what it wants to be. You know, there's a part of me that likes the idea that one gets recorded when there is one records a podcast when one has something to say on the subject. I was editing, you know, an episode, and I was waiting for me to finish the edit and get it shipped so that I could jump on, because I was really taken with this morning word as like a synonym for dawning. And you know, a new dawn, a new day, and something about almost using morning as a not exactly as a verb, but yes, so you know, something about that. There's something kind of kinetic, something a little bit, you know, morning creative, rather than it be pegged to a particular time of day. It's more about, you know, burgeoning, blossoming, blooming, that kind of thing, growing. I feel like there's space there to actually just do things that are honest. I mean, I'm working with someone at the moment. They're charming as hell. So lovely. Loving having conversations with them. And I also very much enjoy getting voice notes from them, because they're just very pleasant to listen to them talk as well. They listened to the full episode and were like, you know, thank you for this kind of thing. Because, you know, and it's one of those things where like I'm old enough, wise enough, wizened enough to know, not cynically, but to know like, you know, cause people say nice things like, you know, I'd really appreciate your vulnerability. Yeah. I hope you know how, you know, useful this is. And it's like, without being conceited, I do. I actually do. I get it. I do get why this is useful. And it turns out that it's something I'm happy to do, because I, you know, I don't get very many vulnerability hangovers. I feel quite comfortable talking about my stuff, you know, having done it for years. I mean, you weren't around for the Thoroughly Distracted days,
no.
But that was something that I started 11 years ago. I would kind of open up and talk about what was, you know, what was going through my mind. It is not something I find difficult, but I also, yeah, I do understand the use or utility in being able to speak to this stuff and make it okay. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It is really, like, helpful.
Put the tiger on the table, yell at it, like, let it be okay that, that these things are out there. Because by me doing that, it just, it doesn't open the door. It just shows you, like, the door's already open. It's just like holding it out, just, you know, reminding you that it's there, you know, kind of thing. And it's nice to be of use in that way.
Yeah, that's really great. You are. It's always a joy.
Thank you. So, yeah, I think there's a, there's something nice about Morning Creative as being like whenever the mood strikes, whenever the, when, not just in like in a flighty way or just whenever I feel like it, but like whenever it's worth it.
Yeah.
That's when I publish. Yeah. Like, which is, you know, what's your schedule? You know, weekly, monthly? No, I publish when it's worth it.
I love that.
That's something quite nice about
that. That's really kind to the listener. That's really, you know.
And balancing that out with List Envy, which is like, I'm backed up with episodes until June.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's exciting.
I've recorded 4 or 5 and I've got a bunch more scheduled.
Amazing.
So yeah. It's proving fun.
Wonderful. I'm excited to hear how the bonus content goes. I mean, that's exciting to.
Yeah.
It's exciting to see.
Because I'm me and because I enjoy it. And because it is something I care about. Of course, I have been building a website for it today.
Of course. I wouldn't expect anything less.
No. And I tell you what, mate. Oh, my God. So I was unable to do something that I could not have done. It would not really have been possible to do 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
Where I wrote some code that essentially looks, and it's like, yeah, it's just one of those moments where you just go, bloody hell. Looks at the title of the episode and then looks at the chapters. And from that, it can build, the website can build a list with thumbnails and links and other metadata for the things that were talked about in the episode.
Whoa.
For example, we can look at one of the last episodes of the previous season was top 5 modern indie bands. And just looking at the page now, I've got a list of all of the bands and link and their photos, the genre, and a link to their iTunes
page.
I've also got that for albums and stuff as well. Like, there's the top 5 Christmas songs and they're all listed there, song.link URL. Nice. I didn't have to code that individually for each episode.
Wow.
I asked ChatGPT a big prompt and said, look at the title of this episode, and if it's about this kind of thing, then reply with this word. So if it's about a book, reply with Amazon/books. If it's about a song, reply with iTunes/track. And so it's inferring what I should base my list on. And then from there, I know, who do I talk to? Do I need to go to IMDb or another equivalent to get movie information? Do I need to go to here, you know, and pull information that way? But it's that ChatGPT bit in the middle that is able to, just from the title, go, well, this should be a list of films or songs or books or products. And then once I know that, I'm like, here's the database that I'm looking up to match. And it's just based on the chapters. In the show notes, you just get the list of chapters.
Yeah.
You just get Mark's pick is this band, Camilla's pick is this band, and back and forth. But on the website, it's this rich thing. And it's like, didn't take me long to build. And it's like filled out the website like 90% there without me having to do anything.
Wow. That's super cool.
Yeah. And that's fun. And I enjoy that. And it's going to be valuable. And there's, you know, other things that I get to play around with, like, if you want to subscribe to the mailing list, then maybe you can make your own list based on the picks that we chose, or you can order it, or like, can you guess the order? Can you guess our top 5? Like, you know, maybe I can send an email the day before the episode goes out and says, like, based on, you know, all of these items in our shortlist, what do you think made our top five? And maybe you can rank it and share, you know, just a couple of ideas for things I could do that way that make it more shareable and make it more interactive and give people a reason to sign up for the mailing list, which then gives people hopefully a reason to sign up for the Plus subscription.
Very cool.
Which I've now made at a no-brainer price of £2 a month.
Nice. Yep. I like it. An idea that hits me is the newsletter comes out with the episode, and then you get that you as a listener get to make your own top five out of your 10 picks that you could then post on socials or whatever.
Yeah.
So cool, man.
Yeah, because there's the honorable mentions and stuff that I used to do. You know, if I can figure out how to put those back in the website, then yeah, you can take all of those and then make, you know, make your own list. So yeah, there's some options there for things that might be fun to have a play around with. That's been occupying. That's been diverting in a nice way.
you illustrating all of that about the work you've been doing on your project reminds me of how little work I've been doing on mine.
Ooh.
God mode's been a little bit...
Well, you've had a lot on.
Yeah, I'm so freaking... Oh, man. I've been stress eating, and it just... Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been really hard. And it's, you know, stress eating brings out feelings of imposter syndrome because I feel like, no, I beat this. Obviously, that's not a thing. hi. Yes, Mark from the audience. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Hi. One of the there's a couple of people that I follow on TikTok who do weight loss things and or fat loss specifically, and I think both of them really, one of them that I can think of particularly, in fact both of them are very like, this is a continual thing and there will be days when, you know, for whatever reason you're just, or even periods, you know, Easter, you're just going to eat a bunch of chocolate, like whatever it is. There are times in your life when, you know, these things are going to happen, but you know the path.
And yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
You know, you can stray off the path occasionally and that's okay. You know what the path is and you just jump back on the path. So it does not make you an imposter. If anything, it makes you more valuable because you understand this shit's going to happen.
Right.
You know, and that's okay. I still love you. Yeah. And when you're ready to jump back on, here's what you do.
100%.
Because otherwise, what ends up is you end up like me, where you go, it's all about this thing. And then someone's like, that's cool, but what happens if I burn out? And I'm like, or, you know, what happens if I need to take a break? And I'm like, no, not supposed to take breaks, because that's the dogma. Like,
you know
the path. And so,
I'm not afraid. I've strayed from the path before, and, you know, I've gotten my shins all scratched up from the brush. And we've come back and they've healed up again. And so, yeah, I'm not really worried. It's just like, hello, darkness, my old friend. Mm-hmm. You know, like coming, you know, having that pint of ice cream and just being like, man. And it's a little bit too, it's like, this isn't as great as I told myself it was, which is also kind of fun and interesting in its own way.
Mm. There is a thing I understand about cravings, and when it comes to food, like one of the bits of advice that I've heard is like, often you, like for me it might be, you know, a pizza, like you don't need the whole pizza. What you want is a slice of pizza. Like, you want to be able to experience that, and so get yourself a slice of pizza or a couple of slices or whatever, and then have a bunch of other stuff, because what you want is that little endorphin hit, and you can probably do that with a few spoonfuls of ice cream or a smaller tub.
Right.
Without then like having to venture down the whole pint and try and find the seam of chocolate chip that runs all the way through the pot. Like, you just want that dopamine hit, and you want that thing of, oh, I got the thing. And it's like, you can do that without having to eat a pint of it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess. My local favorite grocery store, New Seasons, has recently started stocking pints of ice cream and boxes of tiny ice cream sandwiches from this company called Green Girl Cafe. And it's made with, ice cream is actually gelato.
Yeah.
It's made with four ingredients: coconut milk, maple syrup, vanilla, and reishi mushrooms.
Ooh.
And that's
really?
And that's it. There's no guar gum. There's no like a bunch of additives and preservatives and all these other things. That one's an that one also has chocolate in that with the reishi mushrooms. So it's five ingredients.
What are the mushrooms doing for it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it does something more. I assumed it's just kind of like healthy.
Okay.
It could be flavor. It could be binding. I'm not sure. There's a few other flavors that don't have the reishi mushrooms in them. So I don't think it's right. necessarily consistency based. But
okay.
But yeah, and then in their ice cream sandwiches, they use that gelato with two little cookies that also have like five or six ingredients. So it's nice when you look at the package. You just I can read all these ingredients. I know what they are, and they're not like monosodium glutamate or you know like mm-hmm. big things. Oh, I guess that would definitely not be in ice cream.
I don't know. If you're going for like a salted caramel, you'd probably have some MSG in there.
Possibly. Yeah. I was thinking maybe at some sort of Thai flavor or whatever. I don't know.
Thai ice cream.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Thai ice cream.
Whew. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You have some sort of like a sweet curry. Ooh. Ooh.
Mm. Ooh.
Anyways.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like with all with that coconut milk, like
yeah, exactly. You
know, you're halfway there.
Exactly. But these tiny little ice cream sandwiches, they're like, I don't know if a silver dollar size makes sense to you, but if you make a circle with your fingers, with your thumb and forefinger like that, that's about the radius of it, and it's about like as tall, and it only has 5 grams of sugar, which to me, from the Bean Protocol standpoint, the guidance for everything is to have no sugar, no fruit, no nothing sweeter than a carrot, but you can have there's the one exception is sauces. And you can have sauces that have up to 5 grams of sugar per serving, once a day. And so in my head, I've kind of been like, okay, well, I don't have the sauce, but then I can have maybe this thing. And so that's like a little, not quite an exception. Yeah. Rationalization is like what I like to put it as. And so these, and they're so good. It's not like it's lacking in sweetness or flavor or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's super good. And so that's been my indulgence lately is these little ice cream sandwiches and
nice. We have a thing here called Halo Top, and there are a few.
We have them here too.
Yeah, and they're pretty. They're surprisingly "quote unquote" healthy.
Sure. Yeah.
Much lower calorie.
Yes.
And really, really tasty. Really good.
Yeah, I think. I think some of them use like erythritol or other keto sweeteners that are a little bit better than just straight sugar. Well, depends on who you ask.
Yeah. There's always a turns out.
Yeah. I used to, in my quote unquote sugar free phase before I found the Bean Protocol, I ditched sugar. Like I tried to do paleo for a while, and paleo is like, yeah, you can have maple syrup, you can have honey. Those are fine. And so I had my morning coffee with like 2 tablespoons of maple syrup and, a tablespoon and a half of honey or whatever. And then eventually I tried to get off of that, and I found then the keto world kind of came along, and it was a big boom, and they were like monk fruit.
Bulletproof coffee.
Yeah. Monk fruit, erythritol, stevia. These are the ones because the body reacts differently. And then the Bean Protocol comes along and it's like, no, just wipe it all out. Just no sweeteners at all. So that's what I'm kind of trying to follow now. And it's good. It works.
Yeah. It's weird. Like when I stopped drinking, because I didn't always used to have my coffee black. Like I used to drink it with a bit of milk, like not loads, because then it just becomes milk. But like 2 sugars, and at one point I think up to probably 3. And I think in 2014 when I went on my first sort of proper like weight loss thing, I don't know, like I because milk was out, I just very quickly, surprisingly quickly, I think got used to just, you know, tasting coffee.
Nice.
And now you know, like if someone gives me sweetened coffee, I'm like, I don't like it. I kind of do relish the taste. But I think I do like it strong. Certainly, you know, strong in flavor. It doesn't have to be strong in caffeine, but I want to have that bite, you know. I want to know I've drunk it You know, that's the thing. I want to definitely know that I've drunk my coffee.
My avenue into liking coffee was through coffee ice cream and frappuccinos. So it was highly sweetened, very milky, you know, like, and that was my avenue. So it's been harder to break.
Yes.
I like black coffee now, but I'm off coffee again. Now I'm just drinking tea. I'm drinking Bulletproof Ticino. Ticino is a coffee flavored tea. It uses barley root and dates and a few other things. It's roasted, so it kind of tastes like coffee. And then they also add natural flavors, so it's not super great. But I try to avoid natural flavors as much as possible because they're just like weird chemicals that I don't know much about, and they affect the body weirdly. But, you know, it's just, there's so much to do. There's so much to, the society,
so much to do.
The society just wants to, the food industry just wants to shove whatever they want at you. And it's hard to dodge it all.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is hopefully by next week, I will be somewhat financially untethered to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I won't have a giant mortgage around my neck and debts and things, all being well anyway. By the time you dear listener hear this, I've already been paid. But one of the things where I'm looking forward to, because I remember, you know, for the last 2-3 years it's felt like, do you want the choice has been, do you want to eat healthily and abundantly or cheaply or conveniently? Pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can always pick three, but you can definitely pick two. And health and convenience are the two that I would rather go for. And by convenience, I really just mean more like, I can't be walking for an hour to go to a particular shop and get, you know, because I've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And I don't have a car, you know, so like it kind of does need to come to me. And, you know, abundance, if you're going to lose weight or if I'm going to lose weight, I want to be able to eat loads. you know, I don't want to feel hungry. I don't want to just, you know, feel hungry. So I want to be able to, you know, have some satiety, but put the right stuff in. And so it's nice to be able to contemplate again, feeling pretty guilt-free about getting a big supermarket order in, knowing that it's full of really good, nutritious, healthy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's something very pleasing about the sight of a stocked fridge, and a stocked cupboard, because it's options, you know? Like, I'm just going to buy, like, here's loads of meats, loads of things. I'll stick all the meat in the freezer and I can, like, I have options. I can decide what I want the next day.
Yeah.
I don't have to be restricted to, you know, this is what I was sort of able to get this week. You know, because I'm sort of living through, you know, every few days, what can I go for? And it'll be nice to be able to just get the big weekly shop in. I mean, God, I remember doing that in COVID, and I was doing it for my neighbor and stuff, you know, do the weekly shop and get essentials in and all those things. And, you know, since running the business, the new business, and things being, you know, tight as they have been, and juggling the priorities, because it's all about, like, nothing's ever impossible. It's all about what your priorities are.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be in the headspace to make that a priority, but also just financially, it becomes a lot easier, especially in the time where we are, where everything's, you know, more expensive because some stuff is harder to come by. Like,
yeah.
I haven't seen an avocado in ages. So I'm really relishing, like I said, just being able to, you know, have like massive salads.
Yeah,
and like it be all the green stuff and all the good stuff, but just plenty. That just feels good.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and it reminds me of how I've felt before. And I think that there's when it comes around time to try out God mode, it will be difficult, but it will also be easy. Part of it is going to be, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about the intermittent fasting. One of the things that I really liked about that is that, like, during your eating time, you can have as much as you want, and you can, and you know, as long as the good food that's appropriate, like, eat till you're full and till you feel satisfied and everything. And then when it's not time to eat, there will be moments where you get hungry, of course, you know, and there's going to be resetting and there's going to be the difficult times and stuff. But the thing that really helped me, at least with those time frames, is I could just tell myself, it's just not time. I would love to eat right now, but it's after 6 p.m. I just don't eat after 6 p.m. anymore. Or at least for right now, during this experiment, this is not the time I eat. And like when it comes time to eat, then I get to eat and it's wonderful.
Well, the big difference there is it's choice. It's I'm choosing not to eat rather than I don't have the option because, you know, the cupboard's bare kind of thing. And I mean, sure. It hasn't been that bad, but you know what I mean? It's not I haven't been able to, afford to eat or anything.
Right.
It's more that getting the right stuff in, you know, it's much cheaper to buy, you know, not great convenient food than it is to buy, you know, the better stuff. But it is about, the choice is the different thing. It's the agency. Mm-hmm. It's being able to say, no, I'm making a conscious choice not to eat or not to eat as much or not to eat these things, as opposed to being told by some system or other that is not of your own making, that is not of your own choice, that you can't. That's the difference. And for me, it's interesting. Like we talked, you know, a couple of weeks ago about just me feeling like good and okay when I'm in a, you know, an unfamiliar place and I can meet some basic needs. Mm-hmm. I remember going to the first time I went, I attended a conference on my own was 2013. I went to Poland and I'd never done anything like this before. I'd only traveled once on my own before and that was a few years before and it had been a bit disastrous, but so this is my first time and I was really nervous and all this stuff. I remember the second day got back because, you know, this was a conference. The first night, I think there was either some dinner on or, you know, you could go to a thing and there'd be food there or whatever. The third night, I was with a bunch of people and we figured it out and we, you know, had good times. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't think I ate that much because I was just too busy having a fun time. Day two, like, I hardly spoke to anyone. I had lunch there and then I got back to my hostel and I tried to use a website to get like a pizza delivered. And I think, you know, they're a lot better now, but like, I think I paid for it, or it might've been actually that I said, no, cause if I had paid for it, I probably would have, called someone, but I think it was one of those where like, you know, you order your pizza or whatever it is and pay for it at the door and it never arrived. I was bummed out because like there was nowhere to go. Like it was in the middle of, not in the middle of nowhere. It was in the middle of a suburban, of an urban jungle. Like there was nothing. And it felt kind of miserable to not have, you know, to be able to cater for myself in that sense.
Yeah, like, to be deprived of the option.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, my belly wasn't, you know, rumbling or anything like particularly. Mm-hmm. It was more about the ability to look after oneself and to meet those needs.
Yeah.
And that's the thing for me. It's like I said, you know, the sight of a stocked cupboard, like it's abundance. I never really had that much of a story growing up of like food not being available. That wasn't a thing. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously something in my brain where choosing to go without is different from feeling like you don't have the option. I don't know.
No, I get that. And what I just described is kind of like a middle ground between the two. It's like, worst case, you know, emergency scenario, you can go eat, whatever. But like you've given yourself this guideline of, I just don't eat right now. And for me, it was easy to just follow along. Like, hey, I'm doing an experiment. I'm not going to eat right now during these times. And I'm just, okay, I'm feeling hungry. My tummy is grumbly a little bit.
You can sort of be with that and notice it and sort of, oh, wow, you know, like be curious about the sensation or whatever, rather than like try and, resist it, fight it.
Yeah, exactly. You take it as a meditation. You take it as a awareness opportunity and then you distract yourself. You go, I'm going to do some work. I'm going to do some yoga. I'm going to do some whatever. I'm going to go for a run.
Oh, right.
Tell me.
next episode, I want to tell you about my plans for mobility. I have plans.
Ooh.
Yeah, listener, we will join you next week, and we will talk about we've got more to talk about. So, but we don't want to flood your ears with, you know, with too much of us. So we will check in with you next week.
And as always, correct me if I'm wrong.
I've been learning a new song today.
Ooh. Well,
started yesterday. It's one of those, what's great is it's one of those four chord wonders.
Nice.
It's the, you know, it's the, what is it? 1-5-6-4. 1-5-6-4.
Okay.
The sort of the universal four chords.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it was, it's a very good one. Do you know a song called Stick Season?
That does not sound familiar.
I think it's one of those, because this is how songs get discovered now. I think it's one of those that did the TikToks.
Uh-huh.
But it's a great song about breakups, mismatched expectations, not quite being able to get over someone, and it's expressed very well. And it's really interesting what you can do with the same four chords.
Oh my
god! You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
It still works.
That's awesome. Can you sing any of it?
Let's see.
I want to hear it.
It's in A, but, you know, I don't know where my capo is, and fuck it.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Lover, mom, but it's the season of the sticks, and I saw your mom, but she forgot that I existed, and it's half my fault, because I like to play the victim. I drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, and I dream each night of some version of you that I might not have, but I did not lose. Now your tire tracks and one pair of shoes, and I'm split in half, but I'll have to do something like that.
Nice. Love it. Thank you for that.
It's got a lovely verse melody as well. It's a good song.